Good morning.
This week's Parsha Tetzaveh dealing with the begadim that the Kohanim wore. And the Pasuk says, V'nasata al-choshem mishpat ha-sarim v'satumim. They inserted the Urim Tumim stones in the choshem mishpat, which the Kohen Gadol wore. V'hayu al-lev Aaron. It was on the lev of Aaron. B'vo lifnei Hashem. But when he came before Hashem, V'nasan Aaron es mishpat b'nei sal libo lifnei Hashem tamid. And he carried that constantly. So the conception of lev is one which when we say b'chol levavcha, with all your heart, or any time when we mention lev, obviously we don't mean the physical heart. We mean a person's thoughts, his how he thinks about things. The Ibn Ezra here says, how do we understand that then? What is the mishpat then that we're talking about that always has to be on top of the Kohen's mind? It refers to the dinim and gezeiras Hashem, that a Kohen has to be ultra familiar with all the halachas that deal with interpersonal interactions. The Shaul Meshev in his Sefer and Chumash says when he was reading this parsha in the year 1860, he just happened to think of a pshat and what this pasuk meant. And the pshat is that why is it what's the Torah emphasizing here that Aaron has to be constantly holding in these halachas? He said there's a hava mina that a person who's a leader doesn't have to know anything. He doesn't have to learn. Why? Because the Gemara in Megillah tells us that in Lasuke Hilchasa, in order to come out with something that's halacha lemaisa, a person needs siyata deshmaya. You can't do it on your own. A person just, even if he learns all day and night, he still needs siyata deshmaya in order to paskin correctly. So if that's true, a person might say, well, then why am I learning? If I need the siyata deshmaya anyway, I could just daven, and Hashem will give me the answer, because I need to do that anyway. It's still a prerequisite for what I'm doing. So the Shaul Meshev said, that's what the pasuk's here telling us, not that way. No, Aaron, he knew it. It was chakuk on his lev. It was engraved on his heart. He knew the halachas backwards, forwards. He had learned them. And still, you need that siyata deshmaya. But you can't do it without learning it first, because otherwise the siyata deshmaya has no place to take hold. Where, you know, in some chanal neis, you can't make a person know something that he never learned to begin with. And he says, this is a musar haskel for the rabbanim of our time who say we don't have to learn, we're just going to use siyata deshmaya in order to paskin. So, and he leaves it there. Who is he referring to? Well, which rabbis are using siyata deshmaya to paskin almost as their go-to method instead of being very involved in learning? So he doesn't say, doesn't make any allusions. However, we have other maisim. There is a maisa brought down by the Pardes Yosef, who was like a great-grandson of Sivus. In his Sefer HaNechumash, he brings down maisa with the Noda Bihuda, who was friendly with the Besht, the Baal Shem Tov, and the Noda Bihuda Shaila came before him about a chicken, was it kosher treif, and the Noda Bihuda Paskida was kosher, and the Besht said, yeah, I could see that was kosher, there's no ruach tuma surrounding it like it normally does by a treifa. So it's recorded in that maisa that the Noda Bihuda got very angry at him. That's how you paskin a Shaila? Like, but with ruach hakodesh to determine whether or not, no, you have to learn. If you use your methodology, eventually people won't know anything. Torah will go down the drain. So it could be that's who the Shaul Meshev is angry with here, that Rabbanim who rely on the Ruach HaKodesh, if they have it, in order to paskin and not on, very deep and intense learning. Obviously, that doesn't apply to us to a large degree. Nobody, none of us, have the nisayon of saying, well, we can rely on our Ruach HaKodesh. we don't have those pretensions. However, that doesn't stop us from having opinions and deus, which aren't necessarily justified. That we do have in spades. We all have opinions on situations, on situations that arise, even though we might not necessarily be holding in the halachas that apply to those situations. Just as one example, there was a case that came out last year, in March, from the New Jersey Appellate Court, as follows. They had two Jewish litigants that came to the court, and the case was that there was a Frum family in Teaneck who were going away for a few weeks, and they had a dog, and the dog couldn't come with them. So they hired a dog sitter, a Frum single woman, to sit in the house and to watch the dog as well. And during her time there, she was allowed to invite friends over. And at one point, she invited a single guy over. And in the court testimony, he said he came over, he played with the dog, he left the door open, the front door was open, anybody could have walked in. And after having played with the dog for a while, he said, "I'm really tired, I have to take a nap." And she said, "You can stay upstairs in the bed, I'm going to walk the dog. And when I come back, you can go." So he said, "Fine." So he went upstairs, she went and walked the dog. She came back to wake him up upstairs. He stepped off our bed, and somehow that triggered the dog. As soon as the guy put his feet on the floor, the dog jumped on him and bit his foot and really, really hurt him. Like, there was blood gushing everywhere. He actually had to go to the emergency room. They had to do a surgery. Cost a lot of money. And Zahu. Then the guy sued the family who owned the dog. He's saying, your wild dog bit me, and I want money for it. And it came to court, and the family said, we don't owe him any money. What was their counterclaim? Because there's an Isser of Yichud. And since here everybody's Jewish and religious, this man knows he wasn't allowed to be alone in the house with this woman, which means he was effectively trespassing, in which case he shouldn't have been there, and we're not responsible for the dog bite. And that was the case that came before the court. What are you supposed to do in such a situation? What does the court rule? A non-Jewish court, the regular New Jersey state court. So the Rabbanim and the Dayanim who spoke about this, and I listened to a number of Shirim on this case, they said they agreed that it really was Toloi and should he have been there or not. And the rest of the case, meaning if he could be there, the family would have to pay. If he couldn't be there, the family wouldn't have to pay. And that seems like a very intuitive thought in this process. And indeed, most of the people, gave their opinions based on that. I think that that's wrong. And it's anybody who has any passing familiarity with Chosh and Mishpat will know there's a lot of different halachas involved in this case, which would make one hesitant to give such a quick opinion. The first is Yichud itself. The Gemara in Kedushin says that Pesach Pesuch Lushis HaRabim, that if you have a door open to the public arena, then there is no Isser of Yichud. And we paskin that way in Shulchan Aruch as well, in Ibn HaEzer. So is that true today? If somebody is in their house with the door open, does that automatically preclude an Isser of Yichud happening? Rav Moshe paskins, no, that the Isser of Yichud is really a metzias, that when we say that the Pesach is open, l'rishus harabim, it means, is it likely somebody will come in? So in America today, we can ask ourselves the question, if you're in your house, it could be the front door is open, but if somebody came into your house, into the bedroom where you were sleeping, would you be surprised? Obviously, if you're in Missouri, you're taking your life in your hands if you walk into somebody's house. They could pull a gun on you. So there really would be, according to her motion, Isser Yichud, even if the door was wide open, because you don't expect anybody's going to walk all the way in. They might knock on the door and say, is anybody home? But nobody's going to start walking all the way into the house. So according to Rav Moshe, in this case, with the man going upstairs to the bedroom, there definitely would have been an Isser of Yichud. And that argument would collapse. So that's the first halachic consideration. The second halachic consideration is, why were they in court to begin with? There's a big, very severe Isser of going to court. When you have two Jewish parties, Isser Achos, that you're not allowed to go to secular court. Gemara in Sanhedrin says that. We pass in this way in Shulchan Aruch. And the Svara for it is that Hashem told us what we're supposed to do. We're children of the Torah. We're B'nai Torah. And that's where we find our morality. When a person goes to the secular court to judge his case, what he is effectively saying is, even though I know Hashem wants me to do some, Hashem has an opinion on this, I don't care about Hashem's opinion, I'd rather hear what this goyish judge wants me to do, and I'm going to do what the Goyish judge says. Your mom is throwing away Hashem and his Torah by going to secular court. And because of that, it's a very serious issue to go to Arkos. We go to Beis Din, and the Beis Din tells us what does Hashem want in that specific situation. In this case, there's one added wrinkle, though, that you're dealing with, presumably, the man wants to sue the insurance company. So the insurance company is not Jewish, presumably, and when you're dealing with a not-Jew, you are allowed to go to court. But he's not suing the insurance company directly, he's suing the family. And then if the family loses, the insurance would pay. So this happens with doctors. When you sue a doctor for malpractice, you're suing the doctor. And then if he loses, the malpractice insurance will kick in. What do we say in such cases? So even though there are some poskim who say you could be mako and go straight to court in that situation because eventually it's the insurance who's going to be paying, many poskim, I would say even it would be the mainstream opinion of Rav Sternbach Shlita and Rav Zilberstein Shlita say no, you're not allowed to sue a Jewish doctor in court just to get to his insurance. First, you have to go through Beis Din. Court can't be your first stop because of the Iser Kos. You don't get rid of the Iser Kos because eventually a non-Jewish party is going to be providing the funding for the court decision. So that's another point of halacha that we would have to decide in order before we would know what the truth, the psak in this case was. The third is, why is everybody taking for granted the fact that the dog biting him, definitely, if all else being equal, the family should be held accountable for that? Is that true? All those Gemaras and Bava Kama now come to the floor. It's Karen. It's a sure that's goring another person or animal. When do we say that the owner of the shore is accountable and when not? Don't we have a concept of Tam and Muad that the first three times, right, that the shore gores, it's only Chatzi Nezek. And how do we view that? And why is that so important? Because the Gemara in Gittin, which speaks about our powers today as Dayanim in Beis Din, if one goes to Beis Din today, we don't paskin a lot of shaylos. There's a lot of shaylos that the Torah says is not in your domain. Shluchusai kavdinan. We're just shluchim of the big Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael. And when we're outside of Eretz Yisrael, for instance, we're not allowed to paskin kenas, cases of kenas. So how do we view the case of the dog biting the person? What is that, a kenas? Is that mamon? What is that exactly? the Shulchan Aruch paskins that today ain't govin karen. We don't collect, if there's animal damages, stamazoi, we don't collect it because it's considered a kenas. And even though we have a concept of you still have to be mafias somebody, the Shulchan Aruch says, even though technically I'm not going to collect for somebody if their animal damages another person, but the two can still come to Beis Din and we can say, listen, to make things right, from the halachic perspective, the chatzi nezek, you don't have to pay, but you do have, you were responsible for your animal. You have to take care of the damages here. The Ketzos HaChoshen says that's only true. When do we say that? Is when the damage that was done was of a mamon nature, when it's monetary damages. But if it's purely a fine, a kenas, a true kenas, meaning it's not connected to the damages that were done, then we don't even make the person be mafias. We don't make one party appease the other. So how do we paskin when a shore gores or a dog bites the first time or the second time? The Gemara paskins, the Rambam paskins, that's a pure kenas. That the chatzi nezek you pay has nothing to do with the damage the person actually received. It's just a fine on the owner of the animal. In which case, the whole halacha of collecting for it in court would not apply in Beis Din b'zman hazeh. So that's another shaila that has to be paskined. And then a fourth shaila that would have to be paskined in this case is that just because the person was doing something wrong, and you think he shouldn't be there, why should that preclude you from having to pay for damage to him? Which everybody took for granted. Of course that's true. That's not true. There was a famous case, perhaps apocryphal, but when I first, about 25 years ago, there was a boy, not Jewish, school in Seattle, where he was constantly being bullied. And one of the ways in which he was being bullied in school was people kept stealing his sandwiches every day. They kept stealing his lunch. And he didn't know who was doing it. He complained to the parents. He complained to the teachers. Nothing helped. So one day in the middle of class, the boy is, the teacher's teaching, and a different boy in the class starts coughing. And then he really starts coughing. And then he starts turning blue, and nobody knows what's happening. And the bullied boy, the victim, stands up. He says, aha, that's the person who stole my sandwich. I poisoned my sandwich. So the halacha is, what do you do in such a situation? He said what the poison was. They had an antidote. There was no lasting damage. Somebody asked this shaila of Reb Zilberstein at a medical ethics conference, Lu Yitzur, these were Jewish children, would the bully victim be allowed to do that? Can you poison your sandwich for a thief who might then eat it? So Reb Zilberstein says, we see from the Gemara that if somebody is stealing from a field of orla, the Gemara says you don't have to tell the thief that's orla, even though it's misi b'dei shemayim. Why? Because halitei l'rasha v'yamos. Stoop the mouth of the rasha and let him die. He's doing an avera, so let him die. He shouldn't be doing the avera to begin with. Reb Zilberstein said this publicly. It caused a firestorm amongst the poskim. Everybody disagreed. And they said, most of the poskim said, we don't agree with this for the following svara, that if you see a thief and he steals something, he shoplifts a candy bar, let's say, and then he's walking outside and falls in a river and he starts drowning because he can't swim. Are you mechuyif to save him? Of course. Lo samad adam reacha. He's a thief. The fact that he's a thief doesn't preclude you from the chiyuv of having to save his life, in which case, how can you cause somebody's death just because he's a thief if you're mechuyev to save him? That doesn't make sense. So in this case as well, okay, maybe he was violating yichud. That doesn't mean you're allowed to damage him. So we have four different halachas here, which are very complex, which in the case it sounded simple. We'd be ready to give an opinion right away. But you would have to know each of those four halachas, what the actual psak was. And if you were just guessing, so what are your chances of guessing correctly? That's four halachas, permutation, right? One out of two, four times in a row, you have a 1 in 16 chance of being correct, which is about 6%, which means you're a 94% chance of being wrong in whatever opinion you give. In this case, what did the court decide? The court decided, the first court they went to said, it's true, it's a normative halacha in Yiddishkeit, in Judaism, of yichud, and therefore the man should have known that, and he shouldn't have been there, and therefore the family doesn't have to pay. But then he appealed the case, and it went to the appellate court, and the appellate court actually reversed the case, and they said, well, we're not rabbis. And these halachas, you know, Torah can be complicated. And as we could see from the way Jews practice, not everybody agrees in the interpretation of halachas, of Torah. And therefore, if the man thought his interpretation was correct, there was no reason for him to presume that the family would think different. So if he thought he was allowed to be there and that was legitimate, then he was allowed to be there and the family would be responsible for the damages that the dog inflicted upon him. Yiratzon, it should be Hashem's will that we should have the anivus, not to be able to give opinions when we don't know what we're talking about, and Hashem should give us the koch and the zitfleisch to learn that we should, yes, no. Yeah.